This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 21st of April 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Now, may I introduce our readers for this week, Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. And so we'll begin with our usual notices. The first to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. The number again, 01962 861 229. Now, as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to go back for an item, to read it, to get listen to it again, or move on from an item. For those of you with computers or tablets, as you probably know, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And an additional way of listening to us now is that the Hampshire Chronicle have turned our recording into a podcast, and you can listen to us via the Hampshire Chronicle website. Well, we start with our usual headline stories. And the first is from Heather, saying the M3 plan is pulled after £139 million is spent.
Smart motorway plans for the M3 between Winchester and the M27 have been scrapped by the government. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced that plans for smart motorways, including from Junction 9 at Winall to 14 at Southampton, have been rejected. The decision comes after the government in January 2022 paused the expansion of smart motorways where the hard shoulder is used as a permanent live traffic lane. It followed widespread and persistent concerns about the danger, with several deaths directly blamed on the lack of a hard shoulder. According to the National Highways website, the works between Junction 9 to 14 cost £139 million. While the smart motorway works were paused, National Highways have been installing a new concrete barrier in the central reservation to improve safety. The roads body had been waiting for 5 years' worth of safety data to be available following an inquiry from the Transport Select Committee. Reacting to the latest news, Winchester MP Steve Bryan said, "This is the right decision and one we have been arguing for. The review has to some extent complicated matters around Junction 9, which can now proceed without this in play," referring to the major revamp of the M3A34 interchange. Mr. Bryan added, "The question I will be asking now in Parliament is, if new smart motorways are not safe, why are they staying in place for the M27 or even for the M3 south of Winchester, where the hard shoulder is temporarily missing while the central reservation works take place?" County Councillor Nick Adams-King, executive lead member for Universal Services, said, "From a personal perspective, I welcome the removal of smart motorways, although this creates a challenge in terms of accommodating the ever-increasing amount of traffic on our roads. I recognise the real concern of people using the roads, and we should only be providing highways which people feel confident to use. I very much hope that the improvements to the M3, and most particularly Junction 9 at Winall, will continue, taking into account the need now to provide a different design to the motorway portions. These works are vital for the Winchester area and Hampshire in general, and I'm already lobbying to ensure that they proceed at pace. But though new smart motorways have been stopped, Existing ones, such as on the M3 in North Hampshire between junctions 2 and 4A, and on the M27 between junctions 11 and 4, are set to stay. The remaining stretches are now set to be subjected to a safety refit, so there are 150 more emergency stopping places across the network. Edmund King, president of the AA, called for hard shoulders to be restored to the whole motorway network. He told the BBC, basically, drivers don't trust them. The technology is not foolproof, and 37% of breakdowns on smart motorways happen in live lanes. And basically, those drivers are sitting ducks. The Prime Minister said, all drivers deserve to have confidence in the roads they use to get around the country.
Thank you, Heather. Now, Richard's headline story is headed Sharp Divisions on Big College Expansion.
Public reaction to Winchester College's plans for two boarding houses and development on a playing field has been mixed. The college, the city's biggest private employer, is seeking planning permission for the scheme on tennis courts at Kingsgate Park off St Cross Road. A large chunk of Kingsgate Park would also be redeveloped for an all-weather hockey pitch with artificial grass. Two sections of wall on St Cross Road will be demolished to allow access to the houses. They are needed for the private school to accept girl boarders from 2024. The application has comment from 16 objectors and 4 supporters. It also has a neutral comment from the City of Winchester Trust. Jane Hurd, Secretary of Kingsgate Tennis Club, said the college has been proactive in presenting the case for this development and seeking the opinions of us as an active tennis club with over 500 members. We only see this development as a positive benefit to Winchester and our tennis club members. The facility would benefit various clubs, in particular hockey, but it also will allow a much increased tennis facility in the summer. Mike Nell of Mornington Drive said, I wish to register my strong objection to the installation of an all-weather pitch in the above application. At a time when the quality of our groundwater, rivers and streams is under more threat than ever before, the introduction of such a large source of chemical and particulate pollution is unconscionable. We need to preserve the quality of our watercourses rigorously for the sake of the health of the people, wildlife and the planet. Catherine Elsmore of Edgar Road said, the proposed development will in no way preserve or enhance the area and will have a significant detrimental effect upon the local residential area. Andrew Short, Director of Sport at Pilgrim School, said, this proposed facility would be a vast improvement on the original, offering greater flexibility of access until later due to lighting and the ability to play on a full-sized hockey pitch. As a school, we would look forward to broadening our sporting permission, particularly in terms of hockey, tennis, and in our local vicinity. Meanwhile, the college says the development is vital to its long-term future. A spokesperson said, in order to be able to continue to contribute to the cultural, social, economic, and environmental well-being of the city, the college needs to retain its position as a leading educational establishment that has adapted to meet the needs of pupils in the future. Without investment in the new buildings and other facilities, the college's prestige and its ability to maintain its existing land and buildings to the current high standards is vulnerable.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah's piece is headed Police Cash Boost to Crank Up War on Drugs.
Hampshire police say they are cracking down on drug-related harm and reoffending in the county by rolling out schemes such as its Drug Testing on Arrest initiative. They've also set up a new partnership with NHS England, HM Prison Services and other bodies to maximise treatment, prevention and enforcement to help people dealing with drug misuse. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones has set up a Pan-Hampshire Combating Drugs Board to bring together leaders and organisations to focus on the issue. Ms Jones said, Drugs are often the root cause of antisocial behaviour, which, as Commissioner, I know is an issue that many residents are concerned about. The government has just launched its strategy to clamp down on antisocial behaviour. One of the plan's commitments is banning the sale of nitrous oxide, or laughing gas, because of the links it has to young people's health and offending behaviour. In Hampshire, the police relentlessly prioritise cracking down on supply lines and exploitation. But this is only part of the solution. To truly combat the issue of drugs, we also need effective treatment, rehabilitation and education. There will now be an added focus on early intervention and education in the lives of young people to help lead to less exploitation, crime and pressure on public services. This includes the Drug Testing on Arrest initiative, which aims to identify people who misuse Class A drugs and commit crime to fund their habit, and ensure they are steered out of crime and into treatment at the earliest opportunity. The Drugs Testing on Arrest was launched in Basingstoke custody in October 2022. The pilot found that from October to December 2022, 335 people were eligible to be tested. Not all were tested due to having no indication of drug use to commit the offence, or the offender was a child. 261 were tested, equating to almost 78%. 178 were trigger offenders with associated intelligence of suspected drug use. Police referred 157 offenders to commissioned treatment services to help deal with their addictions. Of those, 30 failed to attend their assessment, that was 19%, with 26 being prosecuted. Police believe that if treatment services were based in custody suites, this figure would dramatically reduce. Following its initial success, the Commissioner has provided £482,000 of funding from the Drug Confiscation Fund to enable the scheme to be rolled out more widely in all four custody centres in Hampshire from this month.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Half Rentals Fail Energy Targets. More than half of the private rental houses in Winchester would fail to meet a proposed new energy efficiency standard, an investigation has found. The BBC Shared Data Unit analysed all the EPC ratings given to rental properties inspected in England and Wales over the past 5 full years of data. Over that time, there were 1.9 million inspections, and of these, 1.1 million received a rating below C. In the UK, about 6 out of 10 recently inspected rental homes would fail to meet the standard. In Winchester, 56% of the private rental inspections between 2018 and 22 rated the property below a C, while 5% of the properties did not have the potential to even reach a grade C. Some 33% of inspections in the district found a portable heater was used as a secondary heating method, and the most common recommendation was for wall insulation. However, energy efficiency ratings have improved compared to the previous 5-year period. On average, private rentals inspected in the last 5 years could save a third of their current heating costs if their landlords made all the recommended improvements. Rachel Earwaker, senior economist with the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, said that improving the homes would have many benefits. She said, on average, across the private rental sector, for properties that are currently below the C level, that can make it into the C bracket, the government has estimated savings of around £270 a year for private renters. Chris Norris, the Director of Policy at the National Residential Landlords Association, said the sector needs up to 6 years to get the majority of properties to grade C. He said, realistically, if we are still aiming at an EPC C, We probably need a leading time of at least 5 years to try and make sure that we're all getting the properties through. The alternative is you either have lots of properties leave the market, or if that isn't helpful when you've got high demand, or you have a system that exempts properties because landlords haven't been able to carry out the work, that's not really achieving your objective. Right, well, before we go on to the next item, which would usually be the death notices, I've just got a quick item to tell you about the AGM of Winchester Talking News, which will be held this year on Thursday the 18th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. That's in Littleton. The postcode is SO226QL, if that's of any interest to you. There will be a talk by Kimberly Barber, who is the regional editor of the Hampshire and Wiltshire weekly titles, which are Hampshire Chronicle, Romsey Advertiser, Basingstoke Gazette, Andover Advertiser, Salisbury Journal and the Forest Journal. So if you'd like to come along to that, please join us. There will be afternoon tea, and it would be very helpful if you could respond to tell us that you might be coming. The telephone number for John Richards, our chairman, is 023 8073 2888. I'll read that again, 023 8073 2888. Well, now we go on to the death notices, and the first is being read by Heather, please.
Allen, Ron Allen, former proprietor of R and N Edwards Builders, peacefully at home, 7th of April.
Burr, Allen Henry Burr, on the 30th of March, aged 94.
Hunt, Irene Hunt, passed away at Marlfield Care Home, Alton, on the 31st of March.
Primer, David Gerald Primer. The funeral of David General Primer will take place on the 4th of May at 2:30 at St. Andrew's Church, Tichborne.
Robinson, Betty Robinson, known as Barbara, passed away at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 31st of March, aged 96.
Stocker, Derek Stocker, peacefully at West Home Care Home, 9th of March.
Taylor, Margaret Ann Taylor, tragically lost her life on the 22nd of March, aged 71.
Webb, Gordon Webb, known as Howard, peacefully at home, 30th of March, aged 94. And now we move on to Christian comment, which is being read by Deborah, please.
Yes, it's entitled Practicing Resurrection, and it's offered by the Reverend Philip Crinks. The American poet Wendell Berry ended one of his poems with the suggestion that we should practice resurrection. A lot of Berry's readers have struggled to understand what he meant. Is resurrection something we can really turn into a behaviour or even a habit? It may not seem like it, but perhaps as Christians we can. Perhaps it can be a way of life for us. If we look at the stories of first Christians in the day after Jesus begins to appear to them. In John's Gospel, when the disciples are gathered on the evening of that first Easter day, they are terrified that the world will overcome them. They do not yet see that by rising, Jesus has overcome the world. When the disciples are gathered, Jesus appears to them, and he shows them how to practice resurrection. His simple message is, peace be with you. And if we ourselves want to practice resurrection and overcome the fallenness of the world, we will do that only through a transforming kind of peace which Jesus brings. This is the peace which refuses to return evil for evil, the peace which is willing to acknowledge our own faults and seek forgiveness for them, the peace which refuses to be compelled by the worldly cycle of wrongdoing and revenge for wrongdoing, and instead participates in a cycle of grace. In Luke's Gospel, two disciples walk unknowingly with Jesus on the road to Emmaus. They tell the apparent stranger how Jesus of Nazareth, a prophet powerful in deed and word before God and all the people, was handed over to be condemned to death and crucified. They do not yet see that Jesus is still mighty in deed and word, even now. It is only when they refuse to let him go away from them and invite him into their community that they recognize he's been with them all along. It's only when he's been welcomed at the table with them that he makes himself known in the breaking of bread. The Lord is risen indeed and is still powerful. But the powerfulness of his resurrection, Jesus has said to them, is inextricable from his sacrificial suffering, bearing condemnation and even death with humility. It was only through those that he could enter into his glory. And if we also want to practice this kind of resurrection and share in its power, we will also have to accept our share of suffering and walk the way of humble service. It's not so mysterious then what it means to practice resurrection and even to turn it into a habit. It means getting used to sharing in Christ's resurrection life through the peace he offers us, and through us to all people, so that the fallenness of the world may be overcome. It means sharing in his humility and suffering as the only way to know true power. Almighty Father, who gladdened the disciples with the sight of the risen Lord, give us such knowledge of his presence with us that we may be strengthened and sustained by his risen life, and serve you continually in righteousness and truth, through the same Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you, Deborah. Now we go on to letters to the editor. Just six letters this week, and the first to be read by Heather, please.
This letter is entitled City Stay Up. When the final whistle blew at the Raymond McEnhill Stadium on Monday afternoon, it confirmed that with their 2-1 victory over Salisbury, Winchester City was safe from relegation and would be staying at Step 3, the Southern Premier League, one level below the National League South. This is a momentous achievement for a team who were tipped for relegation at the start of the season, but have defied the odds throughout the year, from winning away at playoff contenders Swindon Supermarine, a last-minute winner at Hanwell, rescuing a point from 2-0 down at home to Merthyr, a backs-to-the-wall win at Hendon, to the three wins against Beaconsfield, Hayes and Salisbury, which put them out of the bottom four's reach. 10 years ago, as Winchester City emerged from uncertainty with their future secured, Steve Bryan said that a successful football club was very much in Winchester's interests, a statement I'm sure everyone can agree with, regardless of political affiliation.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
And Mark Rowe celebrates the same fantastic news. I received the fantastic news of Winchester City's 2-1 away to Salisbury, which means they are staying in the Southern Premier South League. Congratulations to Davo and the lads, plus everyone at Winchester City FC. I've followed the team during the season and it's been a roller coaster ride. Winchester City FC welcomes everyone and is a true community club and much loved, plus very supportive fans. That's from Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
This letter comes from John and Wendy Hunt, near misses at a zebra crossing. We would like to draw your attention to the crossing at the town end of Eastgate Street. In the last week, we have both been nearly knocked down twice by car drivers not looking carefully enough as they approach the roundabout from Eastgate Street. We live in Water Lane, so obviously use the crossing a lot. Last week, we were halfway across and cars by the pavement were queuing to turn left into Bridge Street. A car came rushing past the queue traffic on the outside and just missed us. Today we were on our way home and halfway on the crossing when a car came rushing down yet again, but this time turning left into Bridge Street. So many drivers are not looking and checking the zebra crossing, always in a rush. This has happened before, but not in such quick succession, twice in 1 week. It is a matter of time before someone is badly injured or even killed here. Just hope it isn't us. We wonder how many other local residents who use this zebra crossing regularly have had similar experiences. We always check very carefully before starting to cross and when on the crossing. But with the Belisha beacons flashing, we shouldn't have to, especially when on the crossing. John and Wendy Hunt, Water Lane, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. The next letter is written by Esther Dovey, and it's headed London Protest. For anyone concerned about the environment, perhaps you've been watching the BBC's Wild Isles and want to make a difference, here's your opportunity to make your voice heard. On April the 21st to the 24th, there will be a big protest in London. It's being organised by Extinction Rebellion, but it's not an XR protest, it's for all groups and all people. Over 200 other groups have declared their participation or support, including NHS groups, justice groups, fairer politics groups, cost of living crisis groups, housing groups, faith groups, peace groups, the Odd Union, and of course, environmental groups. There will be picketing of government departments. A big diversity march on Earth Day for Saturday. Speakers, music, kids' activities, etc. Because this protest is for everyone, it will be a lawful event facilitated by the police like any other ordinary protest. People will be attending from the Romsey area, including members of Romsey XR and other Romsey groups, such as Transition Town Romsey, Eastleigh, Southampton, Winchester, including a coalition of five Winchester-based groups, and Salisbury, as well as from across the UK. And there's more information on the Extinction Rebellion website. That letter was written by Esther Dovey, Baddesley Close, North Baddesley. Heather, please.
This letter is entitled Have a Chat. We know it can be difficult to stay socially connected, but keeping in touch and chatting with others can have a huge impact. Conversations can create connections, offer new perspectives, teach you new things, boost happiness, and increase mental well-being. Which is why the NHS Volunteer Responders Programme has reintroduced the check-in and chat service, where local readers who would like a friendly chat or simply a listening ear can request a phone call with a volunteer, whether it be a one-off call or a series of calls. Receiving a check-in and chat call is easy and completely free. Readers in Hampshire can organise it by calling 0808 196 3382. That's 0808 196 3382 from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. You can also visit nhvolunteerresponders.org.uk, where you will find further information. If your readers would like a call, we are encouraging them to please reach out on the number above, or to share this information with a loved one, friend, neighbour, or anyone who may need a little extra support and would benefit from a check-in chat call. This letter is from Sam Ward, OBE, Deputy CO, Royal Voluntary Service.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Simon Lear is celebrating Coronation Cheer. The Hursley Community Shop and Post Office is run by enthusiastic volunteers, where coronation flags and bunting will adorn the shop. Certainly more than a solitary overhead flag on Winchester High Street for the Platinum Jubilee. The coronation of King Charles III is a celebration. An atmosphere of happiness and joy will be experienced by Hursley's residents, where many events will take place. A celebration indeed. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. Now, Richard is going to read editorial comment, please.
Yes, which is headed this week, Right Decision on M3, but Years Too Late. It is the right decision, if a belated one, to partially scrap smart motorways. The nearly finished scheme from Winchester to Southampton will now not be used, and others are being scrapped nationwide, although there are still hundreds of miles where they are operating. There's no doubt they are highly dangerous, and dozens of deaths across the country testify to that. They were only introduced in the first place as a cheaper way of increasing the capacity of motorways without the hugely expensive construction of another lane. But too many lives have been lost, and the serious stress for millions of drivers using smart motorways should also be considered. We have to go back to basics and get out of the mindset that we should allow continued growth of the road network. We are never going to address the climate crisis if we carry on expanding capacity and putting more traffic onto our roads. Restricting this growth of the motorway network will spur conversion to public transport and more imaginative ways of getting people and things from A to B. The underlying snag is that too many people in high places are wedded to the concept that motorways are all that really count.
Thank you, Richard. Now I'm going to read the opinion piece, which this week is written by Joanna Lewis. You couldn't make it up. Last Saturday, for the first time in my life, I decided to watch the Grand National. I've always boycotted it, despite the boos and shouts of, "Oh, don't be such a killjoy." But when it comes to animals, I'm totally mush. If those adverts on Freeview come on showing cruelty to donkeys, then well, I'm done for. I blame my childhood. I was brought up watching Johnny Morris's Animal Magic on TV. He would have conversations with animals at Bristol Zoo, who appeared to talk back. Age 9, I was the only vegetarian in the village, at a time when you were given two choices in restaurants, extra veg or a stuffed pepper. Age 13, I organised my first protest when a science teacher produced a dead rat for dissection, face up, pinned down. Oh, at the time, we were overrun with cute baby guinea pigs, not realising just how quickly the little furballs would get it on. And I was having riding lessons on a pony called Silver. The thought of horses having to be put down because of human entertainment, as I saw it, crossed a line for me. But this year, when in holiday mode, himself said, "Let's put a bet on the National and watch it," I thought, well, why not? It's bound to be more safe now, and I'm fed up with being called boring. So I sat down in front of the widescreen TV with my two-way bet on Velvet Elvis, no idea what that is exactly, later than the start time, expecting to have missed it. If only we had. My goodness, carnage unfolded, didn't it? Halfway through, I was reduced to tears. When I realised the race was rerouted around a jump on the second lap because the horse could not get up, which usually means one thing, that was it. I left the room. It was horrible. Seeing horses tumble after falling the ridiculously high fences, watching riderless horses galloping to the front, fearing they would cause jockeys and horses fatal accidents. Yes, the delay from protesters likely unsettled some horses at the first jumps, but did that really cost the lives of three of these beautiful animals, as some insist? Envoy Special, Dark Raven, Hill 16, RIP. Yes, these superb creatures are trained for these equine Olympic events. Maybe they do have, as one jockey said, the race of their lives. But all that use of the whip towards the end doesn't quite match the industry rhetoric of the welfare and love rhetoric of the industry rhetoric of the welfare and love of horses always being at the fore of this sport. Even Rowley Overs, real name, head of the respected organisation World Horse Welfare, said the race was difficult to watch and that progress had been too slow in implementing the jump race risk model. Surely the British Horse Racing Authority and the Aintree Racecourse are not the organisation to lead any inquiry and make recommendations. We've been too complacent. World Horse Welfare should take the lead. It's crucial to do this quickly to preempt high-risk protest during races. The racecourse is a dangerous place to be for horses and jockeys at the best of times. Everyone should take inspiration from HW founder Ada Cole. She worked in a practical, peaceful way, forging strong, friendly links with those who had the power to implement effective change. But big, dramatic protests are in vogue. This week, a Just Stop Oil protester at the World Snooker Championship jumped onto a table dispensing orange powder. "It's a first," said Stephen Hendry. This weekend, Extinction Rebellion will be active in London, and with the coronation looming, how must the police and security services be working overtime to secure the event from protesters? Thanks to Prince Harry's pointed and mean indiscretions, his presence has heightened the terror risk for the public and for attendees. These are dangerous times to be horsing around. Well, we now have Belgarum, a couple of alternative looks at the news, starting with Richard, please.
Misty-eyed about the 80s. What could you do in 1980s Winchester that you can't do now? That was a question we posed to our readers on Facebook, and we received a number of responses. Many are nostalgic and thought-provoking, while others are a bit silly. Here are a few of our favourites. David Campbell, among many other misses the great department store. Go to Debenhams, I love that shop. We love Teresa Roach's youthful optimism. I was a kid. The whole of Winchester was my playground. We're not sure why Barry Jones misses this, but it sounds like a memorable night. Watch the swimming pool burn down after watching Top Gun at the cinema on North Walls. Charles Broomfield definitely had some great nights out. Pub crawl up the high street, then Champs for a burger and milkshake. Melanie Phillips misses the 80s culture, seeing punks sitting on the Buttercross. Barbara Smith wasn't the only one who said this. Back then, Winchester was a great place to shop. Sadly, not anymore. Rents are too expensive and online shopping has ruined the high streets everywhere. Tim Holder was one of many who mentioned the parking problems, while Martin Barley missed the absence of potholes.
Thank you, Deborah, please.
Well, I've got Belgarum's comment here, and this bit's entitled Cops Deal with Prickly Customer. It's varied work being a police officer. E-Shift in Winchester stood down yesterday and posted a message on social media about their stint on duty. There was an arrest after an assault, suspicious incidents, and people to be given reassurance. A road traffic incident needed a whole team to attend. A vulnerable missing person was returned to a place of safety, and suspected poachers apprehended at a wildlife reserve. Colleagues up in Andover needed a hand too, and PC Williams made sure a hedgehog crossed the road safely. And it's accompanied by a photograph of PC Williams. It's obviously in a country lane at night, illuminated by the car headlights. And PC Williams is walking behind the hedgehog, apparently clapping to encourage it to the side. The Post said, one of the beautiful parts of rural policing is seeing all of the wild animals come to life at night.
Thank you, Deborah. Now we have four items of historical interest, starting with Heather, please.
Uni expert sheds light on hidden lives of hermits. A University of Winchester archaeologist has released a new book detailing the lives of hermits. Written by Simon Roffey, reader in medieval Archaeology. The book is the first comprehensive archaeological study of the UK's hermitages, anchorite cells, and eremitic communities. While many hermits were men of faith or mystics seeking a life of contemplation, they often had jobs as ferrymen, guides, or lighthouse keepers. Simon said, the majority were religious, and some were made saints like St. Cuthbert. To live as a hermit was considered by many churchmen to be the religious life par excellence, and many lived a life of intense prayer and devotional practice. Some hermits even became famous. St. Robert of Knaresborough developed such a reputation as a wise man that King John visited him in his Yorkshire cave, hoping to glean some sage advice. Meanwhile, the occupant of a Warkworth hermitage lived in a complex cave hewn out of a cliff face which had an inner chamber, chapel, and a kitchen. The hermit in residence was kept in relative comfort due to a stipend provided by the Duke of Northumberland. The book also explains that while the majority of hermits were male, most anchorites, who lived in closed-off cells attached to religious communities, were women. Simon's book, An Archaeological History of Hermitages and Eremitic Communities in Medieval Britain and Beyond, is being published by Routledge.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Yes, it's about the Titanic Heroes Bravery Medals. Medals awarded to the young telegraphist who picked up the Titanic's distress call are to go under the hammer at auction. Harold Cottam, 21, a wireless operator aboard the passenger liner RMS Carpathia, was off duty when he picked up the call on the night of April the 14th, 1912. For his actions, Mr. Cottam was hailed a hero and awarded a silver Carpathia medal and a Liverpool Humane Society medal for bravery. The medals are being sold by a private collector, and the collection also includes photographs, his pocket watch, and signed paperwork. It's estimated to fetch between £20,000 and £30,000 when it's sold on April the 2nd at Henry Aldridge and Son in Devizes, Wiltshire. Mr. Cottam was about to go to bed when he heard the radio station at Cape Cod trying to establish contact with the Titanic to transmit routine radio telegrams. In what he'd hoped would be his last business of the day, Mr. Cottam radioed Titanic's operator, reminding him of the waiting messages. The operator responded, "Come at once, we have struck a berg, position 4146 north, 5115 west." Mr. Cottam raced to the bridge to tell the officer on watch, and then the two ran to the cabin of Captain Arthur Rostron to give him the news. Captain Rostron gave immediate orders for the Carpathia to change course toward the Titanic. The Cunard Line steamship was the only vessel to respond to the Titanic's distress signals and arrived on the scene at 4 a.m. the following morning to rescue 700 survivors from the icy waters of the North Atlantic. Auctioneer Andrew Aldridge said, though he'd already worked an 18-hour day, Cottam stayed at his radio for the next 3 days until he collapsed from exhaustion. Despite his relative obscurity, a true hero in every sense of the word, and this archive represents the vital part he played in saving the lives of those from the Titanic.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Netfix assignment for uni history expert. A University of Winchester professor has acted as a historical advisor on an upcoming Netflix film. Ryan Lavelle, a professor of early medieval history, was an advisor on all 5 seasons of TV Saxon drama The Last Kingdom, as well as the series film finale Seven Kings Must Die, which premieres on Netflix on April the 14th. Produced by the makers of Downton Abbey, Carnival Films, both the show and the follow-up film were mainly shot in Hungary. Ryan went to Hungary for the filming of the first season in 2014, but since then has worked with the producers remotely. This has meant receiving calls and messages asking about everything from the contents of the Middle Ages menu to Saxon shield designs. He also dispensed advice on a diverse range of subjects, from the composition of the court and politics and everyday life in Anglo-Saxon England, to marriage traditions, costumes and head coverings. Ryan said, "The producers have listened to me where they have needed to, but they haven't let my obsession for historical detail drive the project." Set in the 9th century, The Last Kingdom is based on a series of best-selling novels by Bernard Cornwell, much of the action taking place in Winchester, the ancient capital of Wessex. The series follows the exploits of the fictional warrior hero Uhtred, a Saxon nobleman kidnapped as a boy by Vikings, who reluctantly sides with King Alfred in his wars with the invading Danes. When Alfred dies, Uhtred continues to fight for his sons Edward and Athelstan, and the late king's daughter, Athelfled of Mercia. In Seven Kings Must Die, Uhtred must combat a new invader, the Danish warrior king Anlaf, who has united all of Athelstan's enemies in a great alliance which threatens the new Saxon king's dreams of a united kingdom. Ryan added, "I think the show has a fairly good feel for the period and the different factions which existed then and the kinds of things which motivated them." He continued, "I believe it has been broadly welcomed by many scholars of the period because it has attracted so much interest and rewards historical knowledge. It's also supplied a cast of characters I can draw on to bring these stories alive for my students, as well as some juicy anecdotes."
Thank you, Deborah. My historical piece is about the Jane Austen house that needs £200,000 needed to keep it open. A fundraising appeal has been launched to help Chawton House in its 20th year of being open to the public. The site was once owned by Jane Austen's brother and is looking to secure its legacy for the years to come. Chawton House is looking to raise £200,000 over the next 12 months to keep the doors open. The tumultuous last 3 years have seen the charity survive COVID closures and restrictions, destructive storms, flooding, widespread ash dieback, and thousands of pounds worth of work to remove dangerous trees. Now the cost of living crisis, inflation and rise in the cost of heating have left reserves exhausted and finances in a precarious state. Chief Executive Katie Child said, "Since 2015, Chawton House has thrown open its doors to the public and transformed from a by-appointment academic library into an award-winning and much-loved historic estate with beautiful grounds and gardens. 2023 marks 20 years since Chawton House opened to the public for the first time, and whilst we want to celebrate what we have done and look forward to what we will do, especially running up to Jane Austen's 250th birthday, we face a perilous and uncertain future and need your help to realise our full potential. Chawton House is special. It is a place you can visit on your own and not be lonely, where children are encouraged to explore, or where you can lose yourself in the stories of women's writing. It's a space for community, where you can find inspiration, comfort, and even cake. We would be missed now if we were gone." Chair of Trustees Louise Ansell said, "Building on the work of the last two decades, we want Chawton House to forge ahead into a future that celebrates literature and the arts, continues to inspire writers, artists and creatives, as well as providing new opportunities for emerging talent. Though the most famous, Jane Austen, is not the only person to be inspired by Chawton House, as proven by our successful Visiting Fellows programme, stunning artistic responses to the space and countless testimonials given by visitors of all ages over the years. 2023 will continue the work we have started, but we can't do this alone. Supporting Chawton House's anniversary appeal will ensure that it remains a space at the core of the community, both locally and internationally." Right, thank you, Heather. Now, Richard, please.
Must see for vintage motor enthusiasts. A Hampshire charity are hosting a classic car rally on May the 14th to raise funds for Hampshire hospitals. Hampshire Medical Fund is a charity which buys cutting-edge medical equipment outside of NHS budgets for hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover. It was founded by the late Earl of Carnarvon in 1981 and held its first classic car rally in 2017. With the burden of funding requirements on the NHS ever increasing, the Hampshire Medical Fund's work is increasingly necessary to help enable Hampshire hospitals to provide the best possible care for patients. Hampshire Medical Fund's annual Classic Car Rally gives auto enthusiasts the chance to show off their vintage and classic cars, as well as getting the chance to look at other attendees' vehicles. Starting at Highclere Castle, the rally will take place in several outdoor locations throughout the day, with food included. The fund's Robert Smith said, "We're really excited for the event this year. We'll be travelling between some fantastic locations, including Highclere Castle and Laverston Park Farm. Obviously, fundamentally, we're there fundraising, but it's a great day out with like-minded people with the opportunity to see firsthand some real classic and vintage cars."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
And this is about an inaugural books festival. The first Winchester Books Festival is taking place this weekend and tickets are still available. The three-day event, held from April the 21st to the 23rd and sponsored by the University of Winchester, has a multitude of talks on a wide variety of subjects. Charles Spencer, brother of Princess Diana, will be at Winchester College on April the 21st at 12 midday to talk about his book, The White Ship, which tells the story of the ship sinking, which killed Henry I's only legitimate heir in 1120. On the same day, Winchester resident and RAF fast jet pilot Mandy Hickson will be promoting her book, An Officer, Not a Gentleman, while Jill Hornby, the Sunday Times best-selling author of Miss Austin, will be at Milner Hall at 3 o'clock on April the 22nd. Other headliners are novelist Sarah Barclay and Marina Wheeler at the University on April the 23rd at 11 in the morning with her book, The Lost Homestead.
Thank you, Deborah. And now Heather is going to read an item which is the most exciting for all four of us here, because all four of us are also members of the Cheswell Theatre. Heather, please.
Thank you, Peter. This is Spring Theatre Offerings to cater for every taste. Cheswell Theatre in Winchester has announced its upcoming programme of shows and events. As previously reported, the next production by the Winchester-based amateur dramatics group will be Amanda Whittington's The Thrill of Love. Directed by Alec Walters, the show runs from May the 13th to the 20th and follows the story of Ruth Ellis, the last woman to be hanged in Britain in 1955 after being convicted of killing her lover. The play dramatises the real-life story and takes a look at the woman under the headlines. Ellis was no stranger to the 1950s underworld. A nightclub hostess with a history of chaotic relationships, she managed a little place in Knightsbridge where people went to forget their troubles. But meeting a hard-drinking and cruel racing driver brought greater tragedy for them both. The play offers a window into Ruth's world and the society that sought to convict her. The Thrill of Love contains some adult themes, including the depiction of domestic violence. The Society has also announced its next production will be Treasure Island, adapted for stage by Phil Wilmot and directed by Sarah Hawkins. An informal reading of the script will take place on April 21st, with open auditions on April the 22nd to 24th at 7:45 p.m. All are welcome to attend, with a large cast that includes both male and female pirates, with the well-known characters of Jim Hawkins, Long John Silver, Blind Pew and Ben Gunn. The show is scheduled to be performed from July 11th to 15th with an outdoor production at Winchester College. Aspiring aspiring writers still have time to enter the Take 10 Chesil Theatre New Writing Festival. This year's competition features the theme Snakes and Ladders. To enter, applicants must submit a play which is 10 minutes in length, with scripts including 1 to 4 actors with minimal props, lighting and sound. The works must be original, unperformed and unpublished. The deadline for submissions is 11:59 p.m. on Friday, June 2nd. The entries will then be evaluated by an independent panel of judges, all drawn from the world of theatre, drama and entertainment. The winning 10 writers will be announced in November, with the plays given their premiere over the weekend of February the 24th.
Right, thank you. Heather Richard, please.
It's history galore for the half term, apparently. Hampshire Cultural Trust has announced its programme of events for May half term. There'll be an array of activities available across the county, with options suitable for all ages. In Winchester, the 878 AD experience will remain open in the Brooks Centre. Experience the sights and the sounds of Anglo-Saxon Winchester and discover the stories of the people who lived there, brought to life with the spectacular world of Assassin's Creed of Valhalla and Discovery Tour of Viking Age. The experience offers guests both an interactive attraction with live performance element, as well as an augmented reality self-led app tour of Winchester. Tickets for adults cost £10, children aged 5 to 15 cost £7.50, concessions £8, and family tickets for up to 5 people will cost £32.50. Elsewhere in Winchester, the gallery at Winchester Arc will be hosting a new exhibition of the work of English landscape painter John Constable. Running from May the 26th to August the 16th, the exhibition Constable the Dark Side has been specially curated by art historian Nicola Moorby. It will feature examples of Constable's work across a range of mediums, including oil, watercolour, pencil and ink, as well as an in-depth look at mezzotint, a technique reliant on the emergence of light from dark. The Arc will also be housing the exhibition In Flow in the city space. The first solo exhibition from James Murray is being presented in response to Constable's work in the main gallery. It will feature a new series of abstract works which celebrate painting as a medium. Meanwhile, Winchester City Museum will be taken over by Norman invaders for a special event day. Ever wondered whether you'd be strong enough to fight in full armour? Actually, I haven't, because I don't think I would be, but anyway. Or which weapon would cause the most damage? How about what would happen if you committed a crime in Norman times? Find out all this and more as the museum is taken over by Normal Normans. The event will take place on Monday, May the 29th, and will be included in the price of admission to the museum.
Thank you, Richard. A few sort of bits and pieces from me. Thursday the 27th of April at St Bartholomew's Church, King Alfred's Place, Winchester. Art at St Bart's, the first in an exciting series of 3 illustrated lectures by highly renowned artists, all with a connection to Winchester. Friday the 28th, Winchester Chamber Music Festival, that goes on from the 28th to the 1st of May. The first of the events is at St Paul's Church, Winchester. Sunday the 30th, Twyford Waterworks Spring Rally. Discover the story of your drinking water at this historic clean water pumping station. That's at Twyford Waterworks. What else have we got? Oh, Sunday the 7th, Beyond the Barricade. And this is at the Winchester Theatre Royal. And this is the UK's longest running musical theatre concert feature. And it has past principals from Les Mis and delivers over 2 hours of the best of Broadway and the West End. And lastly, Tuesday the 9th of the 5th, Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. That is also at the Theatre Royal, Winchester. Right, finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6 a.m. and set again at around 8:15 p.m. Now we go on to items of general news. Heather, your first article, please.
This item is entitled School Kids Share Craft at Care Home. Residents at a Winchester care home were joined by school children for an Easter crafting session. Abbots Barton on Worthy Road welcomed pupils from Harestock Primary School for the session. Leader of the companionship team, Kirsty Sawyer, said, "It was lovely to see the conversations going across the generations as together they set about creating the perfect Easter bonnet." The care home also held its annual Easter egg hunt with 11 children from the local community taking part. Kirsty said they had a great time running around the garden in search of eggs and carrots, and afterwards were invited to stay for a drink and cake. Lorraine Martin, a resident of Abbots Barton, said, "Welcoming our young visitors was such a nice way to celebrate Easter."
Thinking about where our drinking water comes from.
Oh, yes.
I have an item here about Hampshire going to host the first ever river summit. The UK's first river summit is set to be held on the banks of the Test to talk about the state of our rivers. This has been a hot topic locally, with Southern Water being criticised for discharging sewage into chalk streams. The late Lord Chidgey was at the forefront of the battle to save the sensitive bodies of water with this particular concern, the state of the River Arle near his hometown of Alresford. The event on Tuesday, June the 13th, will see a panel of speakers discussing various topics across water scarcity, agricultural and sewage pollution, and the environmental impacts of industrial practices in the countryside. Claire Zambouni, founder of the UK River Summit, said, "We've gathered river people from all different walks of life and professions, enabling conversations and finding solutions. Being at the heart of the water quality debate in everything we do, we saw this as a valuable opportunity to open up this critical discussion to a wider audience. With so much anger and outrage in the media surrounding our waterways, we hope this event will not only facilitate lively debate, but also collaborative discussion among different stakeholders, all of whom have a passion for our waterways. We invite the public to learn firsthand the issues our rivers are facing and distill our anger to make a positive change." Tickets cost £40 and include access to the UK River Summit, lunch and workshops.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
City figure drug driving. A well-known Winchester High Street figure has been caught drug driving. Kevin Collick, 49, was stopped by the police on Worthy Lane in Winchester on December the 17th last year, a court heard. Collick, of Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, who has sold the big issue on city streets for many years, was breath tested and returned a reading of 3.5 for cannabis when the legal limit is 2. Meaning he was nearly double the legal limit. He admitted the charge when he appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Tuesday, April the 4th. Magistrates in Basingstoke imposed a 12-month driving disqualification, a £150 fine and a £60 victim surcharge. There was no order for costs. The magistrates ordered the financial penalties must be paid by May the 3rd. Collick's departure from Winchester early this year was widely noted. He had split opinion, with not everyone enjoying the almost continuous and widely acclaimed mickey-taking. In 2017, he was chosen by public poll to switch on the Christmas lights in Winchester and raised enough money for charity every Christmas and for children in need. Local graffiti artist Hendog featured him in a mural at the bus station off Friarsgate. After experiencing a period of homelessness, Collick has sold the Big Issue magazine in the city for more than 20 years. The Big Issue declined to comment last month when he left Winchester, except to say that he had moved to another county and was still selling the magazine.
Deborah, my piece is headed Donor Saves His Wife's Life. A husband has donated his own kidney to save the life of his wife of 24 years. Mum of two, Becky Hodnott Isaac, underwent a life-saving kidney transplant in late February at Queen Alexander Hospital after her health deteriorated. The 50-year-old from Romsey has since opened up about her experience after her husband Mark donated his own kidney. Becky, a gynaecology nurse, works at a private hospital in Chandler's Ford and has autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease. Apologies if I got that wrong. The condition is hereditary and causes small cysts to develop in the kidneys. She said, "When they told me I needed a kidney transplant, Mark straight away said he would be screened to see if he was a match. I was told that live donations from male to female are the most successful, and I felt incredibly lucky that Mark was a match and would go through this procedure for me." The pair spent more than a year preparing for the major surgeries, which included a number of hospital appointments, MRI scans, visit to cardiologists, chest x-rays and counselling sessions. Becky said, "We were both really nervous before the operations, especially thinking of our two children, as the ops don't come without risk. Our children, though, are so proud of their dad and what he's done for me. I can't thank him enough and all the wonderful hospital staff who cared for us during this time. The hospital staff at QA are all so caring, from the nurses to the surgeons. They are all phenomenal." Mark added, "Donating a kidney was something I always thought I'd explore from the moment we knew that one day Becky would need a transplant. A part of me thought the chances of me being a match would be slim. I was both nervous and relieved to find I was a match, and it was my privilege to do it. The Wessex Renal team were outstanding, and though I knew I wanted to do it, I couldn't have got through it without the care and attention they gave me." Heather, please.
This item is about 6 million road safety drive. The government is investing more than £6 million in a bid to improve the safety of some Hampshire most dangerous roads. The Department for Transport confirmed on Thursday, April the 6th, a total of £14.4 million will be spent on improving roads across the South East. Hampshire County Council will be receiving approximately £6 million to improve the A35. This forms part of a £47.5 million national investment, which will prevent more than 750 serious injuries over the next 20 years. The seven road schemes benefiting from this latest injection of funding around the southeast include the A35 between the M271 near Totton and the Dorset border, the A2047 between the A3 near Hilsey and the A2030 near Fratton, the A3025 between the A33 in Southampton and the B3033. Through the Safer Roads Fund, these seven roads form part of 27 new schemes that will be delivered across England. The programme will reduce the risk of collisions, in turn reducing congestion, journey times and emissions. To date, £100 million has been provided through the programme to improve the 50 most dangerous roads in England, the majority of which are rural roads. Some of the improvements already made include improved signage, safer pedestrian crossings, and better designed junctions. The allocation of funds has been based on data provided by the Road Safety Foundation. The data analysed is based on a road safety risk, looking at data on those killed and seriously injured alongside traffic levels.
Good, Richard.
Police failing its call targets. Hampshire Police often fail to meet their own targets for emergency and priority calls, an independent report has found. Despite positive findings, Capacity to meet all demand is stretched, the report says, as Hampshire Constabulary struggle to meet demand in both response and call waiting times. The report follows an assessment by His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services in order to determine police effectiveness, efficiency and legitimacy at the force for 2021-22. The report stated, the force fails to attend emergency and priority calls for service within its own target response times on too many occasions. The force assigns a grade to incidents that need police attendance according to the level of threat, harm and risk. The most urgent incidents are assigned grade 1. The target response time for grade 1 is 15 minutes. However, this is being missed on many occasions. We checked 14 incidents in which there had been delays, and in 4 of these, the caller hadn't been told of the delay. Failing to attend calls within target response times may put victims at risk, result in lost evidence, and undermine public confidence in the police. The reporter also added, the force fails to answer calls quickly enough on too many occasions. Abandoned calls may mean callers give up trying to contact the police, which could lead to crimes being unreported and victims not being supported. In a statement, Hampshire Chief Constable Scott Chilton said, whilst there are a lot of positives in the report and the vast majority of the public support the police, this crucial relationship becomes strained when policing does not respond or engage well enough. It's important to me that investigations are carried out in a timely way, with victims being kept updated, as I want people to feel confident to report crime.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Travellers move. At least 20 travellers' caravans that had pitched up on a council car park in Winchester have moved on. The caravans and work vans were parked on the Hampshire County Council staff car park next to the Household Recycling Centre in Bar End since the weekend. Several work vans were seen coming and going from the site, beeping horns and playing loud music. Yesterday morning, April the 19th, all of the vehicles are gone, with litter left behind and damage caused to barriers and cabins. A Hampshire Constabulary spokesman previously said that officers had attended the site.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Animal Rescue Officer Wanted. The RSPCA is looking to hire a new rescue officer in Hampshire. The country's oldest and largest animal welfare charity is looking for one pet lover to be on the front line responding to reports of cruelty, neglect, and injury. The new recruit would also be tasked to deal with complaints as well as collecting and rescuing injured and trapped animals. The charity is looking to fill 11 vacancies across England and Wales, with one candidate responsible for covering Winchester, Eastleigh, Romsey in addition to Southampton. The successful applicant will attend a 4-month training course which starts on September the 11th. The training can include learning how to abseil a mountain, swimming 50 metres fully clothed, and carrying out water rescue training in preparation for what can be a physically demanding role. RSPCA Inspectorate Superintendent Simon Osborne said, "We are looking forward to welcoming our next cohort of frontline officers to our team. Our animal rescue officers alleviate animal suffering by responding to alleged reports of animal cruelty, neglect or injury, dealing with complaints and collecting and rescuing sick, injured or trapped animals before taking them to a place of safety. The role is extremely rewarding but very challenging at the same time. We are looking to recruit those who can deal with difficult situations requiring the ability to stay calm, professional and focused while resilient. Your genuine love of animals and sense of duty will keep you motivated." Heather, please.
Pharmacy shuts shop. Lloyd's Pharmacy at the Badger Farm Sainsbury's Superstore closed on Tuesday. As previously reported, the pharmacy is one of 237 branches which are being closed across the UK due to changing market conditions. it has been confirmed that Lloyd's pharmacies not based in Sainsbury's will remain open. The decision has been called disappointing by the city councillor for Badger Farm and Olives Battery, Brian Laming. He said, "The problem is this is the only pharmacy on this side of the town, and it's leaving the residents of Badger Farm and Olives Battery without any facility that's easy to get to. That's our real concern. And we have written to the church, we have written to the chairman, to the managing director of Sainsbury's, and all we've got back from them is basically a holding email on several occasions. We wanted to work with them to see if there was a possibility of retaining a pharmacy of some sort on site. A member of Lloyd's staff declined to discuss the closure on Tuesday. A note at Lloyd's pharmacy previously read, 'We have been given a revised closure date for April the 18th, 2023. We understand and apologise for the inconvenience they may cause. We therefore will be running down the stock we have and are unable to order any more, so we won't have access to a lot of medications. It is best to change pharmacies as soon as possible to ensure you get your medication on time. The NHS app is the simplest way to do this.'"
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Doctor clocked at 103 miles per hour. A doctor has been reported for speeding on the A303. Police in an unmarked car saw the doctor travelling at 130 miles an hour on Saturday, April the 15th at approximately 8:58. The doctor was not travelling to an emergency and was not using any emergency lighting. He's been reported for an appearance in court. A tweet by Hampshire Roads Policing Unit said, "Out in the unmarked car this evening. The doctor driving this car wasn't travelling to an emergency and wasn't using any kind of emergency lighting. 130 miles an hour on the A303 is unacceptable. Reported for an appearance at court."
Richard, Deborah.
MP weighs in behind city pitch appeal. Winchester MP Steve Brine was at the final home game of the season as Winchester City FC launched a new chapter in its long history. The citizens, who've cemented their place in the Southern Premier League this season, will shortly leave their Abbott Spartan home while vital improvements are made. They've launched an appeal for £100,000. It's a community fundraising campaign to complete the more than £1 million fund that will install a state-of-the-art pitch and community hub. People can contribute by making a donation, large or small, via the GoFundMe site that has been set up. Mr. Brine said, "To take the club to the next phase, we need to significantly upgrade the Charters Community Stadium, and that's why this campaign is so important." Club chairman Ken Raisbeck said, "We are just £100,000 away from completing the development of a state-of-the-art artificial grass pitch that will also serve as a community hub for players, coaches, regulars and families."
Thank you, Deborah. This piece is headed Leisure Centre Site, The Fight Goes On. Friends of River Park say that the battle to prevent the site of the old leisure centre being sold to the University of Southampton is not yet over. The FORP campaign group is battling to stop Winchester City Council disposing of the centre and surrounding land to Southampton University. Campaigners have been buoyed by the result of a similar case in the Supreme Court of Rexday versus Shropshire Council with a recent judgment. Five law lords agreed unanimously that Shropshire County Council had acted illegally in granting planning consent for a building on public land that was subject to a statutory trust. Following the Shropshire result, FORP instructed its legal team to write to the City Council inviting it to quash the decision to dispose of the land. FORP said the council has refused, hence its intent to reopen proceedings. The letter of refusal makes it clear no lease has yet been signed.
The judge who refused FORP consent to appeal made a decision on the grounds that it was not a disposal and that the barrister representing the city council promised it would behave correctly in future after initially failing to advertise the disposal of the site until FORP launched its first legal proceedings. FORP points out to the way the council pressed on with its plans for the multi-storey car park on the Vauxhall site at Bar End. This is why, says former councillor Rose Barnes, who is heading the legal challenge on River Park, it is unwise to trust that WCC, Winchester City Council, would do the correct thing. Neil MacArthur of the council's legal services team says the granting of the lease on River Park is unlikely to happen for some years. But Miss Byrne said there is now an effective blight on the River Park Leisure Centre site, with the redundant buildings becoming ever more derelict. This is because the council has granted a 5-year option to the University of Southampton, which excludes the public from access. Friends of River Park suspect the council is hoping we will run out of steam. However, we don't propose to let the matter drop now that the definitive legal position has been spelled out by the Supreme Court in the Shropshire case with regard to local authorities and public recreation land. The City Council has been asked to comment. Please.
Flower event to help hospice. The medieval Brethren's Hall at the St Cross Almshouses resounded with happy laughter from the ladies of Winchester gathering for a floral workshop recently. They were there to make spring wreaths, tutored by the chairman and committee members from Winchester Floral Design Society, known as the FDS, in aid of raising funds for the Winchester Hospice. Sabrina Marsden, fundraising coordinator for the hospice, welcomed everyone and thanked Winchester FDS for organising the event. She explained that the hospice was mainly dependent on events like this and donations from the public to keep afloat. She commended the event to the assembled ladies and also encouraged them to become volunteers for the hospice. Members of the society assembled floral exhibits in several different styles, which were then raffled to add to the total of over £1,700 raised for the hospice.
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
New Look Body Shop back in business. The Body Shop has reopened in Winchester High Street after it closed for nearly a month to complete a refurbishment. Special guest at the reopening, Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear, snipped a ribbon and welcomed the waiting customers into the store. She said it's fantastic, they're so popular with all ages, all the youngsters are in here and trying everything, it's lovely. This did well before and I'm sure this refurbishment will help them go from strength to strength. Manager Jordan Padley said, we've now got bigger and better things to offer. The store is feeling completely different, feels more welcoming. It was amazing to have the mayor here. She's such a welcoming person, and it was so nice having someone like her be with us to reopen the store to the people waiting outside.
Thank you, Richard. I think probably we ought to say that we had suggested that Richard needed a new body, but he declined. So he had to read the piece anyway. Deborah.
Disruption on London trains. South Western Railway issued a do not travel message for travellers on London Waterloo last Thursday, April 13th. A major signalling problem in the Waterloo area meant a significantly reduced service operated to and from London Waterloo on a very limited number of lines. It affected the journeys of thousands of commuters who use the lines from Southampton through Winchester and Basingstoke, Alton and across from Salisbury. Peter Williams, South Western Region's customer and commercial director, said today, "We are very sorry for the disruption this morning. Due to a major signalling problem, which is still under investigation, we are advising customers not to attempt to travel to or from London Waterloo this morning. Disruption is expected to last until the end of the day, with significantly fewer services able to run on a very limited number of lines. While the problem is in the Waterloo area, we do expect the wider network to be affected, as trains and their crews will be displaced. If you're travelling on the wider network, please check before you travel using a journey planner. Once again, we are sorry for the disruption.
Deborah, my piece is headed Park Delay. The opening of a revamped playground in Winchester city centre has been delayed due to wet weather. As previously reported, the Children's Park in Abbey Gardens closed in September for refurbishment, with plans in place to reopen in time for Easter. However, the opening has been delayed, with the City Council blaming the recent string of wet weather leading up to the holidays. A council spokesperson told the Chronicle, "The very wet weather leading up to the Easter break meant that we were unable to complete the final works needed to be able to open the park in time for the Easter holidays, as originally planned. Now the weather has improved, finishing works are underway, and we look forward to opening the park very soon. We'll update our website and social media channels when the park is open. The work has been carried out at the park to make it more inclusive. Changes include a new accessible roundabout, an inclusive swing, and a communication board for non-verbal children. The council did not provide an updated opening date for the park." Heather.
Children at a hospice in Sutton Scotney enjoyed a very special Easter visit. The Easter Bunny hopped out of the Gazelle Squadron's helicopter and handed out Easter eggs to everyone visiting the hospices. The helicopter crew opened the doors to two helicopters so that the children could look inside before posing for a photo with the Easter Bunny. Every year, the Gazelle Squadron display team volunteer their time to fly their helicopters to Naomi House and Jack's place, depending on the time of year. They bring a special guest for the children visiting the hospices, Santa at Christmas or the Easter Bunny during Easter. Ed, a father whose son visits Naomi House, said, "The kids loved it. It's amazing, and I've never seen helicopters that close up before, especially with the Easter Bunny inside. My son is visiting Naomi House for a couple of days, and he really enjoys his visits. His sister has also come today because she missed her brother." Ray Evans, Gazelle Squadron display team, added, "Naomi House and Jack's place are so close to my heart. They're very special places and filled with such great people. Me and the crew absolutely love hopping into one of our helicopters at Easter to bring a bit of magic and joy and chocolate to the children and families who are visiting the hospices. I was delighted that Easter Bunny could join us too. See you next year."
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Traffic concerns over new Greggs. A Winchester Preservation Group has objected to plans to convert part of the Home Base car park into a Greggs drive-through. The City of Winchester Trust says the proposal could encourage people to make more car trips. The application proposes to cut parking spaces from 196... excuse me!
Bless you!
Making me sneeze. too much excitement. So we're cutting parking spaces from 196 to 152. The bakery would be able to seat 36 customers and be open from 5:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. If approved, the restaurant and drive-through is expected to create around 20 jobs. The City of Winchester Trust said, "It's unclear from the application how the reduction in car parking relates to Winchester City Council's current parking standards." Also, with the McDonald's Tesco application, to which the Trust objected, how the generation of additional car-borne trips relates to the Winchester movement and access strategy. "We therefore object on grounds of lack of clarity." Another objection was received from a member of the public. James Excel of Moorside Road said, "The local road infrastructure is not adequate for the traffic at present, let alone adding a drive-through establishment into it. The connecting roundabout from the A34 and M3 will create a deeper build-up of traffic outside of normal business hours and will hinder and delay HGV movements in and out of our site. The traffic build-up is a concern regarding our fire department, and can they be able to deploy and will they be able to safely deploy and get through this heavily congested areas? The location of the site is on a short road leading off the roundabout, and this will create queues leading back to Winchester. On the planning statement, it said the proposed Greggs units have been located as far as possible from the existing home base. This ensures as many parking spaces as possible are retained close to the home base unit, as well as maintaining frontage visibility to home base. The proposed building location offers the best visibility from the roundabout with Eastern Lane towards the unit.
Right, new publican can't wait to get cracking. Following the departure of previous landlords who had left due to rising costs, a new landlord has taken over a pub in a Hampshire village and is over the moon with his investment. Former pub landlord Jason Colborne has returned to his roots after years away from the industry he loves, spent focusing on his family. The new manager of the Cricketers Inn in Easton said he has no concerns despite the cost of living crisis which caused the previous landlords to leave. Mr. Colborne, 54, said, "I've brought pubs back to life when they were virtually in the grave before. I did that all over the country, so I'm very optimistic I can make this pub work. If I can't, I'll retire. I'm loving it. It's absolutely superb. I'm over the moon with the pub and can't wait to get rocking and rolling. It's quiet at the moment, but it won't be once I get my roasts going and my teeth sunk into it. The Sunday roasts are going to be the best around, and we've got two pub dogs that welcome people in, and I'm going to redecorate and get the letting rooms up and running. Temporary owners have kept the Cricketers running after landlords Donna and James left in January, and now Mr. Colborne is looking for a whole new team to revive the venue. The Cricketers is open every day from midday until 11 p.m. in Eastern Lane, Eastern." Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we've got for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you do have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And would you please put your memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to my readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Deborah.
Goodbye.
And from me, until next time, goodbye.